How are you doing, everybody? It's good to be with you. I'm Allie, if we haven't met before. And we have been asking questions around here the last few weeks. We've been all about getting below the surface in our connection with God through our questions. We all have questions for him. And sometimes we don't see the bigger things that are lurking underneath what look like just kind of surface everyday questions. I have a friend who says, with Jesus, the thing is not the thing. She always says that. And so in this case, I think like the thing that we're asking is actually connected to a deeper thing. We see Jesus push his disciples to the bigger thing, the deeper thing all the time. There was one night when they were out together in a boat and a huge storm blew up and they started taking on water and Jesus was actually asleep and his disciples went and woke him up and asked what sounds like a really reasonable question. They said, "Don't you care if we drown?" And Jesus answered them with a question of his own. He said back to them, "Why are you so afraid?" Through their question, he drove them to the bigger issue he wanted them to notice that was going to impact their entire life of faith. And that is exactly the kind of question that we're going to deal with today. Let me pray for us. Lord, I pray that you would bring our questions to the surface first so that you can take us deeper with you. Help us to be honest about our questions today and to talk openly about the deeper things in a life of faith. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, today we're going to deal with questions that are actually fit in one big category. That's how I would put it. This is like a category of questions. And they're kind of frustrating questions because what we're going to talk about today are questions that don't have an absolute answer. These are questions that don't have a black or a white. They're the questions that we kind of have to fumble our way through wondering, like, did I do the right thing or not? I'm really not sure. So this whole message came about because of the most read article on our Crossroads website. And we kind of did a head scratcher on why it would be. I actually wrote it several years back, and I thought that I was just addressing a really niche question, but I think what happened is I accidentally stumbled on this whole category of questions. The article is called, "Can Christians Do Yoga?" Can Christians do yoga? So, like, you can get my take on that on the article, but the thing is not the thing. What we're doing today is asking, like, why is that article? And you all, I'm not kidding, tens of thousands of people over years have continued to read this article. Why? And honestly, we all asked ourselves, for real, why? Not that many of you are doing yoga, but I think it intrigues us to ask a question like that because it scratches on this category of question. The question of, should I? God, should I? And it seems like that's kind of the question under the question that that article was digging at. It's a question of not can I, but should I? And we all carry around questions that start with should I for God all the time. I don't know what yours are, but I would love to know. For real, right now, I want you to scan this QR code and fill in the very simple box and tell us what your should I God questions are. And let's just see what some of these are together, because I believe we're all carrying questions like this around all the time. God, should I? So none too small. Remember, we're going to go below these in a second. I just want to get a sampling. Maybe you're going to ask me, like, should I spend that much money on a purse? Or should I smoke pot if it's legal? What are yours? Should I listen to Cardi B? I actually have an answer for you on that one. Should I listen to Cardi B? Should I date someone who doesn't go to church? Should I go to Vegas? Should I let my kids participate in Halloween? Should I tell my parents that I lied to them? Okay, these are the questions that we carry around with us all the time, and we have to figure out a way to answer them. But they fall in this gray area. I got one of these questions came up the other day in our household because my daughter, she was going to school, and at lunch that somebody had a deck of cards and she started dealing blackjack at the lunch table. That's my kid. So the teacher comes by and she goes, "You know what, guys? You really shouldn't be playing that game. Find another game." And she came home and said, "Why did she say that?" And I asked her back, "Why do you think the teacher might have reacted differently to blackjack than maybe go fish?" And so we had this interesting question about the gray area. Now, I happen to have an opinion about whether the teacher was right or wrong there, but it's my opinion. We're in a gray area, right? What was she responding to? These are the kinds of things that we get into when we ask these sorts of questions. And I want to suggest to you that there's a deeper question of faith that's underneath this whole category of questions that start with, "God, should I?" And the deeper question is, "How are you supposed to use your freedom?" Your freedom, because we have freedom in our lives. We have freedom where we get to choose. We have areas that the Bible doesn't speak to. Most of our life is lived in a gray area. And in that gray area, we actually have quite a lot of freedom. Even if you tried to follow every single command in Scripture to the best of your ability, everything that was black and white, you would still go through most days living your life in a gray area for so many issues, even if you don't want to. And so I think that the question under the question is really about, what do we do with our freedom? How do we use it well? And are there ways that would be not good? You know, what about the things that God doesn't speak to? And I think we have two ways that we usually deal with this. Two ways we typically deal with the gray area are, we actually pretend like we have less freedom than we do. We shrink the gray area as small as we can possibly get it and push everything into a black or a white, at least as many things as we can get there. And I think a lot of times this comes from a good heart. You know, we want to stay aligned with God. We want to make sure that we're doing the right thing, or we just want to be a decent person. And so we pretend that we have less freedom than we do, and we push things into the black and white. But I think real maturity, real spiritual maturity, is actually not doing that. It's actually navigating the gray area in relationship to God, because that's what he wants with us. So when we push everything into black or white, we actually shortcut the need for a relationship with God, because then we're just, you know, everything's black or everything's white. Or there's another group of people. Maybe we both do, you know, maybe we all do both of these things, who knows, over the course of our life, but some of us lean toward another way of dealing with the gray area, and that's just to, like, relish it. We love the gray area. You know, if God cared, he would have said, you know, I can do whatever I want in the gray area, and that suits me just fine, and we pretend like we have no accountability to God in these gray areas of our life, in the places where we don't have a hard and fast rule, and we just kind of do whatever we want. We assume it's all good. It all must be fine, or he would have said so. And I'd like to suggest to you that we can find another approach if we look closely at a letter in the Bible called 1 Corinthians. Now, this letter was written by the Apostle Paul, and he had lived in the city of Corinth for about 18 months, and at the time of this letter, he was gone. So he knew this church pretty well that he planted and, you know, kind of developed, if you will, in this city. And so he's writing to them because he's heard they're a little bit off the rails. They've gone, like, definitely for number two. He's telling them, like, "I've heard these reports about what's going on there. It sounds like you're off the rails." And he starts giving them a lot of counsel on how to use their freedom. He wants them to develop convictions that are consistent with their life in Christ. And instead of doing that, they've opted for number two. And he's like, "You know, I've been hearing this crazy stuff about all these fights, crazy lawsuits, bad sex practices, crazy wild uses of your gifts, and weird ways you're doing communion. Like, you need to rein it in. You know, we need to develop some convictions about how you're supposed to live in this freedom that you've been given." And he communicates some principles through the book that we're going to look at. And first, he gives them some background. He's like, "You know what? I need you to remember something, because this is impacting your whole life. The way you use your freedom, the way you navigate these gray areas, it's actually going to impact your life in ways that you might not even see." And to explain that to him, he gives an example from ancient Israel, from the nation of Israel and their history after they were rescued out of Egypt from slavery and they come into a new phase of their relationship with God. 1 Corinthians 10 says this, "For I do not want you to be ignorant of the fact, brothers and sisters, that our ancestors were all under the cloud and they all passed through the sea. They were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. They all ate the same spiritual food and drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the spiritual rock that accompanied them, and that rock was Christ. Nevertheless," important word, "nevertheless, God was not pleased with most of them. Their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. And now these things occurred as examples to keep us from setting our hearts on evil things as they did." So right here, Paul compares Old Testament Israel to the state of these New Testament Christians. And he's saying, you need to know what happened to them because it could happen to you. And he starts to compare the two. And he says, you know, they were all the business about them being under the cloud and drank the drink and ate the food. Basically, he's saying they were also rescued by God, provided for by God, brought into relationship with God. They were baptized, communion-taking believers, if you will, just like you, and they died in the wilderness. They died in the wilderness. And the question he wants to drive them to is why? Why? What happened that they never reached the promises that God has for them? Because he rescued them to bring them into a new life, to take them all the way to the promised land, but almost all of them never made it there. And that's the exact point that Paul is driving at with this church, the Corinthians. He wants them to know that even after Israel was set free, they never learned how to live free. They ended up spending their whole life in this in-between, in this gray area, no convictions, and that the same thing could happen to us. So I have four questions for you, and they're straight out of the passages in 1 Corinthians where Paul actually establishes some principles by which we can kind of deal with these questions. Should I, God? What about this area, God? Is it okay, God, if I, how do I, should I ever? Those kinds of wonderings that we have, those kinds of questions on the surface that maybe we just kind of bypass and fumble our way through. He's actually saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. The choices that you're making in that gray area with your freedom, they're actually going to determine whether you ever find the life of God, whether you ever actually thrive. Okay, so are you ready for the first one? First question, if you have a should I question, the first thing I want you to ask yourself is it helpful? This seems super basic, but so many times we bypass this. Is it actually beneficial in some way? Here's where that comes from. The Corinthians had obviously pushed back on Paul. They had said some things to him about their freedom. So he quotes them. He says, "I have the right to do anything you say, but not everything is beneficial." So Paul lays down this principle of you got to ask yourself, is it actually helping you? How many times do we spend time doing things that aren't very helpful? If you're doing the digital fast, you've certainly discovered that along with me, right? How much time do we spend maybe scrolling our phone and it's not really helping us, not helping us physically, emotionally, spiritually, relationally? It's only ever taking from us, not just your phone I'm not talking about, but whatever you're asking God about. We so often spend our time in ways that we never even bother to ask, is this actually helping me? That's sort of the number one thing that I've promised myself. Part of my digital fast was to get off of social media. And so I've promised myself before I go back, I want to be able to write down on a piece of paper what conditions, what circumstances, when and how is this actually helpful? Because if I can't articulate those, I'll just wallow around in the gray area it provides. And so the first way that Paul wants them thinking is it actually helping me? When we're willing to wrestle with this, we have to be in a relationship with God. We have to be able to look him in the face at some point and say, I chose this because I thought it was benefiting me. So that's the first one. The second one is, does it put me under its power? Now, this is a really, really interesting one because Paul quotes again. It's from the same verse. He quotes their excuse. I have the right to do anything, but I will not be mastered by anything. So he gives them a new thought here. He says, okay, so you say that you can be free and you say that you're allowed to do anything, but what about being mastered by something? It's a fascinating word he uses, and it actually calls back to his example from the nation of Israel, because remember who he gave them as the example of what not to do? It was a bunch of former slaves. God had rescued Israel out of slavery, and they came into freedom, and they're living in the wilderness with God. They're supposed to be moving toward the promised land, but they kept acting like slaves. Many times, if you read that part of the Bible, they are actually yearning for their old life. And Paul is actually poking at this principle of not being mastered by something, because he's saying, you and I, he actually says this explicitly in another letter, we are former slaves. We will never have to practice slavery. That's our natural state. And God has taken us and he's freed us and he's brought us into this life of freedom. Now don't allow yourself, Paul says, to be mastered by anything but the God who loves you, the God who rescued you. And this is a really fascinating principle because oftentimes we don't see this at work in our life, or we downplay it, or we willingly close an eye to it. You know, sometimes other people can see this operating in our life better than we can, because we don't want to say that, oh, something has, you know, kind of a pull on me or a power over me. I probably think that the should I questions around like alcohol or marijuana, things like that, this is probably a relevant thing, because a lot of times people will say, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, if it's just a little bit. It's not going anywhere. It doesn't matter that there's alcoholics in my family. I'm fine. It's me. You know, we don't want to acknowledge that sometimes those things carry a power to drag us back into slavery. Now, that's not where you would necessarily see it in my life. The strongest, for me, it's in kind of a weird place. You would see this principle at work in my life if you worked out with me. Now, I do some stuff that really bothers people when I work out. I never track anything. I'm a runner. I won't track my mileage, my pace. You know, I know roughly because I know where I live and what routes I run on, so I have a rough idea, but I won't track anything. I don't wear an Apple Watch for that reason, because it feels like a little master on my wrist. Get up, close the rings, do this many steps. You know, it's like, and I am susceptible to that. You know what I do if I can't help it? Because I'll run on the treadmill sometimes. And of course, there's the tracking right in front of me. I can't help but see it. And so I'll hit stop at like 2.96 miles. I'm done. 3 miles. And I'll just get off the treadmill. Because I have to practice not being sucked back in. Why? Why do I do that? Because my old master, my old self, my flesh has a tendency to move toward measuring and standards and performance. I'm not worried I'm not going to do a good workout. I'm worried it's going to drag me back into slavery. Can you imagine somebody having an Apple Watch on that was like that and going like, oh, I got to close the rings. It would start dictating parts of your day. It would start making choices about what you were going to do. That's the thing that I'm talking about. It might be a really healthy kick in the pants for some of you. I'm not anti-Apple Watch. There's a couple in my own house. I'm just saying, I know who my old master was, and I'm not going to go back there. I'm not going to purposely enslave myself with behavior like that, because I know we have to practice being free. We have to practice being free. We don't have to practice our old crap. We have to practice being free. So we have to like ruthlessly adopt habits that do not allow us to be dragged back into slavery. And so Paul is saying, do not allow yourself to be mastered by something. You know, let's revisit the yoga article for a minute. The topic of yoga is really interesting. I didn't know this, but I started to do some digging. For some of you, you're like, you know what? Happy baby, downward dog, just really good stretching. That's what it is. It's just some really good stretching. And for others of you, you're kind of open and susceptible to spiritual things. You're interested, you're open, you're intrigued by it. And some of you are like, why are we talking about this? Why is this a thing? What if I told you there was a study done in 2016 and 62% of students of yoga and 85% of teachers of yoga done long enough changed their primary reason from exercise to spirituality? Their primary reason for engaging in yoga. Fascinating, right? Does that mean no one can do yoga or the stretching isn't really good for you or the positions aren't helpful for your body? No, it doesn't mean that, but does it mean that there might be a power at work that might be pulling on you that you might not necessarily see at first? It seems so. And here's the deal. You're allowed to ask that question and answer that question with God, to God, and for yourself. But your flesh doesn't want you to do that. The enemy of God doesn't want you to do that because he was your old master. He would love it if you just came right back on into slavery. And so even the bravery of asking this question that Paul is posing, does it have power or could it have power over me? This is a really important consideration as we think about how are we using our freedom? How are we making these decisions about what we're going to do in these gray areas? Okay, third one. Does it hurt others? Now, we're not talking about the like black and white, just shameless harm of other people. That's not what Paul is talking about here. We're not talking about theft or assault or, you know, things like that. Those would be more black and white issues. I think most of us would agree. Paul is speaking to something in the gray area that's pretty subtle here. 1 Corinthians 8:9 says this, "Be careful, however, that the exercise of your rights does not become a stumbling block to the weak." I love that he said your rights, because we love our rights, you know, and we can exercise our rights. We love to exercise our rights. You know, I have the right to do that. So who are you to say anything about it? And he says, careful, when you're exercising your rights, that you don't become a stumbling block to the weak. Now, what he means by weak here, if you went on to read the passage, it's those weaker in faith. Paul is primarily concerned about people coming closer and closer to God. And so he lays down this challenge of if your freedom and your rights get in the way, present a stumbling block to somebody coming closer to God, then you're free. So you can lay them down or you can pick them back up. Now, the example Paul gives here is a little bit hard for us to grasp because we don't live in this city at this time, but the church was asking a should we question to Paul. They were asking a question that was, should we eat meat that's been sacrificed to an idol? That was a common practice, and these were, again, we would say false gods that were being sacrificed to in the city of Corinth, and it wouldn't have been unusual for one of them to maybe end up at a meal, maybe with a unbeliever or somebody who is newer into their faith in Jesus. And so the meat gets presented and you're like, wait, should we be eating this? That's kind of what they're asking. And Paul's answer to them is super fascinating. It's so firmly in the gray area. He says, you know what? It's a fake God, so it really has no bearing on the real God. So if you're free enough to understand that, then you can eat it. Unless you're in the presence of somebody who that would interrupt, impact, or prevent their understanding of the real God. If it would be a stumbling block to them, then don't do it. Lay it down, because you're free. You can lay it down or pick it back up again. Think about them. And so he concludes the issue like this. He says, therefore, if what I eat causes my brother or sister to fall into sin, I will never eat meat again so that it will not cause them to fall. He's basically saying, I'm the free one. I can set it down or I can pick it back up for the good of somebody else's journey toward God. Now, I think this actually sounds kind of crazy to us in the culture that we live in. We live in a culture that's like, no, no, no. That is your right, and you don't let anybody stop you from what you have the right to do. You know, we just have this kind of attitude about our rights and our freedoms, and we don't want anyone to, you know, step on those at all. What if you could just step on it? What if you could do that so that it would benefit somebody else? And Paul's not saying let yourself be imposed upon. He's saying if you see that you could be a stumbling block to someone, just set it down. You're no better if you do. You're no worse if you don't. You can just choose. And it made me think of a couple of years ago. I know that you guys, when you see Brian or Chuck or Kyle up here, they pretty much wear the same thing, right? It's a shirt and it's a pair of jeans. Sometimes there's a jacket or a t-shirt or whatever, but it's pretty standard. Like, guys' clothes are not that complicated. Women's clothing it's a lot more complicated. I don't know if you've seen this or not, it just is. And so as I have regularly discovered over the years. And so a couple years ago, I hope you know me well enough to know I would never, ever stand up here in something that I thought was disrespectful or inappropriate. I just wouldn't do that. It's a gray area, but we recognize the setting, right? So I step up and I'm teaching that weekend, and it's a turtleneck, but it's summer and it was sleeveless. So the sleeve ended right here. Now, women's sleeve lengths, let's talk about this. There's long sleeve, there's three-quarter length sleeves, there's elbow length, there's short sleeve, there's camis, there's sleeveless, there's one shoulder, there's even what our dear friend Greg, the Oakley community pastor, calls a flu shot shirt. Those are the ones where you have a sleeve, but it's missing the part right here, you know? He calls that your flu shot shirt. He's like, you getting a flu shot today? Just stick it right in there. It's easy, easy access. He calls them flu shot shirts. There's a lot of different kinds of sleeves, right? And we could have all kinds of opinions about which ones are appropriate for what setting. I think we can all agree we're pretty firmly in a gray area there. But I heard a lot of things, and I do mean a lot of things, about shoulders. We just have a lot of opinions about the shoulders. And so what was my first reaction? Probably what yours would be. How, you want to talk about my shoulders? That's what you got from this message. You know, are you serious right now? You know, that it's that kind of thing. You feel that, like, offense, you know? This is your basic freedom. I should be able to wear that shirt. It was a turtleneck, for goodness sake. But I heard this little nudge from God right about the time I wanted to say that. And he was like, hey, psst. And I just paused long enough to consider what's really going on here. And I decided what's really going on here is I'm in a gray area and I can just set that down. I think that's what he wanted me to pause long enough to consider. That maybe, just maybe, we live in a time that's taught us that we need to fight for every single right or freedom that we have and use it anytime we want, wherever we want. If that's our approach, that's not freedom. Paul is saying you could pick it up or put it back down. You could pick it up in one situation and put it down in another. You could pick it up with some people and put it down with another. With the freedom to move and adjust and not be so charged up about that one thing, that is freedom. And I feel like God just nudged me a little bit. And I went, you know what? The thing is not the thing. Because the thing is the people that are listening. And if a shoulder or anything else is a distraction, set it down. Just set it down. This is about me. This is about people's faith. And so I just took a deep breath and moved on. And also, you'll probably email me more times about other things. And we're all in a gray area together. And so we just have to ask ourselves, is somebody else's journey toward God, is somebody else's faith at stake? And if it is, we get to decide, do I pick it up? Do I put it down for the good of others and the glory of God? And that brings us to our last question, which is, does it glorify God? This is the fourth question. That if you have a, should I, God? And this is a little bit like our first one in that sometimes we just want to run to the edges of this. We just want to go like, would you be mad at me, God? You know, we want the answer to like, would you be mad at me if I did this? This is a totally different question. This is, does it actually glorify God? And this comes from 1 Corinthians 10. Paul's actually addressing some more food and drink issues, some more questions to the church. Jewish dietary laws were pretty strict, so they had a lot of questions they addressed about this kind of thing. And so we get this from our verse in 1 Corinthians 10, our last question. So whether you eat or drink, or whatever you do, he broadens it, or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. So in this gray area, when we get to choose, when we have freedom, when we ask God, should I do it or not? Should I go there or not? Should I be with him or not? We need to ask, does it bring God glory? What is glory exactly? I asked God this question. And I remember how many years ago it was, only because we were on our first vacation with my oldest son. He was maybe like a year old, and I just remember it was the first time we took him to the beach. So this is like, we're pushing 20 years ago. And I remember asking God, okay, what's glory? Like, I read it, and I get it, kind of, in the context of the Bible. I understand it's got to do with your majesty and, you know, all the good things about you and all that kind of stuff. But what is glory? Like, can you help me out, God? I just don't know that I fully understand it. So we're on this vacation, and I'm out on the deck of our condo, and I'm watching the tide roll in, and there's a cloud over the sun. And the sun, you know, you can look at the ocean in two spots, and it can look completely different. So the cloud is over one part of the sun, and I look over this way, and it's sort of the water rolling in was grays and blues, kind of dull, and looked a little lifeless, just kind of like not an ocean you're going to go, ah, you know. And then over here, the part that the rays of sun, I could see them, and they were making prisms of all these colors, and off the little crest of the waves were like diamond, you know, patterns. It was just absolutely beautiful. And all the blues and greens were coming out of the water. Couldn't have been more different than the other side. And I just, to the best of my ability to understand the voice of God, I just got this idea right then that he was answering that question. And I looked one way and it was like, that's not glory. That is. Same body of water, just like same life. You know, we can work with the same life, the same matter. We're looking at the same ocean. And he's like, this part, kind of gray, sort of dull, sort of lifeless over here. And this part, wow. And I think about this in terms of how we exist with our freedom. Like we get to choose. Our life is going to look like one of these things. And we get to make some choices about how much it sparkles. How much glory do you see through it? How much of God's light or goodness or love is reflected through our life? Same life. You could go two different directions with it. One glory, maybe one not. I had a friend in college who told me I'd lived in Ohio too long. She grew up in Tennessee. And when it would get sunny, you know, when it gets real cold in the winter, the sun is often out. And it was really sunny and really cold. And I said to her, I was like, what's the sun doing out? It should be gray. You know, like the winter is gray. And it's so bright and it's bouncing off the snow and it's annoying me. And she was like, you have lived in Ohio too long. She's like, the only good thing about this day is the sun. And she told me, she said, you've just been living with gray skies for too many months. And I said, boy, isn't that the truth? Like, we get used to the dull, lifeless, gray parts of our life. And we mistakenly think that we can't really impact that much. With the digital fast, the other thing that I stopped, like the other thing I decided to give up besides social media, was I have a habit on my drive into work. I will listen to either news or a news podcast. It's just like my time of day where I would take in that kind of information, content, whatever. It's just a habit. And I thought, you know what? I just feel like, I wonder, I don't need that. I just don't need to fill myself with that, especially at the beginning of my day. I'm going to stop. I'm not going to listen to any news during the day. I didn't really feel like, it wasn't some big conviction. It was just like a small habit. I just thought, I'm going to get rid of that. So I have, and I don't know if anybody's noticed, but the last 3 weeks I've sort of been wondering, I think I'm showing up to work different. Because what I've been putting in that place is, generally speaking, worship music. I'll drive in, and sometimes I'll mix it with other fun playlists I have, but a lot of times it's worship music, and I've started to wonder, I wonder if I did this long enough, if you'd notice that I walk in the door, and I'm like, I don't know, I'm different somehow. I'm sparkly or reminded who God is, or I hear something that really fills me with his spirit in a fresh way, or whatever. I just started to wonder, like, I wonder if this matters to the extent that I would actually shine forward his image in a different way, depending on what I do on my drive to work. One life, two choices. Like, one, do I stay in the dull grayness? Is that wrong or immoral? No, it's not. But could I shine? Could I sparkle? Could I reflect his light, his love, his patience, his goodness in a different way? Maybe if I made a different choice. And so that's what Paul says. Whatever you do, do it for the glory of God. We can make choices with our freedom to actually reflect more of him. There's an old confession of faith. There's a handful of confessions of faith that people used to memorize, and some places still do. There are good ways to memorize, like, the tenets of Christian faith. And one of those is called the Westminster Confession of Faith. And there's a line right at the beginning that says, "Man's chief end is to glorify God and enjoy him forever." Man's chief end is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. I think this is a beautiful thought because it forces us to wrestle with, God made us to enjoy life, and he gave us a bunch of freedom to do it. And we get to decide, like, in good, deep, satisfying ways, what are we going to do with that freedom? But anything that doesn't glorify, point to, uphold him, anything that would dishonor the one who gave us that freedom, surely is a bad use of it, right? Surely there's a better use that we could find of the freedom that's been given to us. You know, that freedom comes when we first come out of our slavery, when we first get rescued by God and we come into the life that he made us for. And you were not made to stay in the wilderness. You and I, we were not made to live our life wandering around in the gray area. We were made to glorify God. We were made to point to him, to reflect him, to enjoy him forever. And so many things about what will determine that are answers to, should I? Should I? And so I want you to think of your should I question. We're going to end like this together right now. Could be super small. Remember, the thing is not the thing. So we want to just ask our surface question, but then these four things I want you to think through and see if God doesn't drive you down to a deeper answer. First question about your should I, God, is it beneficial? Is it helping you? Could you write down on a piece of paper how it was helping you? Second question, does it put you under its power? Does it put me under its power? Third question, does it hurt others? Is there something about it that if I did it in this way with these people in front of that circumstance that would actually interrupt somebody else's understanding or path toward God? And the last one is, does it glorify him? Not do you get out of hell, but does it glorify him? Does it actually bring his presence to earth in a vibrant, brighter, more majestic way? Does it glorify God? You know, we don't always need all four of these questions. Maybe just one will hit the nail on the head and that's the only one you need, but sometimes you have a subtle one and you need to kind of see where the arrows are pointing on all four of these. This would be a great conversation with the people who know you best, if you laid your should I God questions on the table and went through these four things together, my guess is we would all end up using our freedom better. So I'm going to pray that you would do that right now. Lord, I ask, first of all, I thank you that you've given us freedom. You've given us a life where we get to choose things. Thank you for that. Help us to use our freedom well. I pray that we would be honest about the answers to these questions and allow them to push us into a deeper connection with you. In Jesus' name, amen. Hey, if you want someone to pray with you about your should I God question, we have prayer teams that are active online and at every single site. So I would just encourage you, get someone praying for you. And if you want even more prayer, you can join us at our Monday night prayer meetings at every site this next week. So I'll see you then.